The Connecticut Constitution provides for three equal branches. We all know that. For state government, it's the executive, the legislative, and judicial. Generally speaking, the legislature passes laws, the executive branch administers the laws, and the judicial branch, they rule on disputes between the two. Okay. Connecticut statutes provide that in the event of serious disaster, enemy attack, sabotage, or other hostile action, or in the event of the immense thereof, the governor may proclaim that a state of civil preparedness emergency exists. Okay. A civil preparedness emergency is defined as a serious disaster or of enemy attack, sabotage, or other hostile action within the state or a neighboring state, or in the event of the imminence of such an event. The statutes also permit the governor to declare a public health emergency when he determines one exists. On March 10th of 2020, and recently again, just on September 1st, earlier this month, even though failing to identify any, quote, serious disaster or enemy attack, sabotage, or other hostile action within the state or neighboring state, or the imminence of such an event, Governor Lamont declared a civil preparedness emergency related to the coronavirus. Very, very interesting. I want to get deeper into this, as well as these new fines that were just made public yesterday. We've been talking about a lot over the last hour or so this morning. And to do that, we're going to bring a great former colleague of mine in the State House of Representatives. He is State Rep Craig Fischbein. Craig, good morning.
Good morning, Gary. And I think Christian and I decided that our candidate for governor is Gabriella.
You got my vote. Yes. Yeah, can't be much worse, right?
Well, I think it can't be much better, actually.
Well, anyway. Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, listen, there's a lot to discuss here. I'm going to get into these fines in one moment. But let's talk about these lawsuits against Governor Ned Lamont.
Yeah, so Attorney Dubitsky and I filed a lawsuit on Friday challenging the declarations in toto. You read a portion of the language regarding the civil preparedness emergency, and clearly a pandemic or coronavirus doesn't fall within the definition of that which would allow for civil preparedness emergency, yet the governor has declared that. So we're asking the court to find, you know, that shouldn't have been able to be declared. And then we have the public health emergency, which I think we all agree that at least at the advent of this, there was a need to do something along those lines. But, you know, it was represented to us that the intent was to flatten the curve. And we all know that the curve has long since been flattened. So we're asking the court to find that the public health emergency that, you know, may have existed at one point doesn't at this point. And, you know, that's what that case has to do with. Interestingly, the Pennsylvania, I don't know if you know about this, the federal court in Pennsylvania ruled over the last week that these rights of association, these orders that bar businesses, you know, people from being around each other, all that stuff, are unconstitutional. There's a very interesting decision that came down regarding that.
Who in Pennsylvania, who filed it?
It was actually four counties. You know, so it was government versus government. And, you know, it's a lengthy decision. It's some 60 pages long. But, you know, the judge ultimately says, I just wanted to quote from the the decision where he talks about, you know, the liberties protected by the Constitution are not fair weather freedoms in place when times are good, but able to be cast aside in times of trouble. Mm-hmm. So, you know, bringing that back home, we do have a Connecticut Constitution. A lot of people don't realize that.
Right.
And we all fall within the U.S. Constitution also. And there are many protections and freedoms that fall in those two documents. And many of those protections and freedoms have been tread upon in light of the coronavirus.
So I wasn't aware of the Pennsylvania case. But now that you mention that, how can we relate that to the state of Connecticut and what Governor Ned Lamont? I don't know. Are there parallels between Lamont's executive orders and the executive order of orders of the governor of Pennsylvania? And how does their state constitution compare to ours?
Their constitution is similar to ours. The orders are very parallel. You know, most of the eastern states, a lot of their orders were parallel, if not repetitive. Hmm. So, you know, I think a lot of the thought process would pull over to an action in Connecticut.
So that really, that's got to be uplifting then. I'm sure you can cite during this case, you can cite what happened in Pennsylvania. How does that then translate to Connecticut? I mean, I'm sure that helps us, but will our courts even look at that as an example?
Well, the courts are required to look at what is known as persuasive precedent. So this is a district court case, in the Western District of Pennsylvania. A federal court action in Connecticut would, you know, the judge would be required to at least look at this as persuasive precedent because they're on the same level. Mm-hmm. Those courts are on the same level. If this case in Pennsylvania, I happen to be in Pennsylvania this week, as a matter of fact, I'm in Harrisburg. If the case got appealed and the appellate court rendered a decision, then that would be a level of binding precedent over a Connecticut federal court. But an action specifically addressing these issues that are in the Pennsylvania case would need to be brought in Connecticut to have it actually apply. Mm. Our case that we filed on Friday is more broad than this case is. This is specific to certain executive orders. But you take this decision, you take the decision that Attorney Davitsky and I got in the middle of June where, you know, the federal court found that Governor Lamont had been violating the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
And you start to piece that stuff together and, you know, the castle starts to crumble.
Yeah, because that case you won, in June.
Yeah, well, we got a preliminary injunction. So for all intents and purposes, I mean, the judge ordered the governor to repeal his unconstitutional executive order. Yes.
We're speaking with State Representative Craig Fishbein. Are you you're in Pennsylvania right now?
Yes, sir.
What then are the chances? And I guess this is maybe a difficult question to ask. I mean, of course, you have your convictions, and your opponents will have theirs. You know, but looking at this objectively and looking at the law, okay, and how it's written and what just happened in Pennsylvania, would you say that the chances of winning this case are better than average?
Yeah, I mean, given those factors, I certainly say yes, more than average. You know, certainly we don't have a civil preparedness. You know, there hasn't been an invasion. There's no imminence of invasion, you know, attack or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, why one would declare something that doesn't exist is another question. But the only place you can go to challenge that is the courts, because the civil preparedness declaration is unchallengeable even under our statutes. You know,
right.
There's a lot of talk about that 10-person group and all of that stuff. That only has to do with the public health declaration. here under the statutes, you know, it is unchallengeable. And as part of this lawsuit, we allege that the violation of the separation of powers doctrine. You know, when it was never intended by the legislature to totally defer their power to the executive branch for potentially ever, you know, without some sort of pullback and check. And I think that's the reason why there's a 6-month provision in the 28-9, which is the power to modify or suspend statutes.
I see. Now, I'll get to the courts. I'll get to the courts in just 1 second. Let me just go back to the governor for a moment. I'm sure that he's got his legal advisors as well. So I guess this is a two-pronged question where, number one, why would they even allow him to continue with these executive orders in this specific manner? And number two, if they know that there is a now lawsuit pending against him regarding these executive orders, why wouldn't he already start rescinding them? And if he knew that, oh my goodness, you know what, they're right, I am overstepping some boundaries, let me rescind these, and maybe they'll withdraw.
Well, that would be logic being applied to this whole situation.
Oh, excuse me. Pardon me for putting some logic in there, right?
And certainly, you know, the case that we were successful in, the day that we filed it, the governor went on TV and basically said that some people had their fingerprints done and some people didn't. And, you know, we're in a pandemic, and shrugged his shoulders. So he didn't care. And, you know, our attorney general said that that case was meritless. And yet we won. Hmm. So that's your government. You know, it gets even more troubling when we get to the fines that I know you want to talk about.
Yeah, I'll get to that in 1 second. So when will this case be heard?
Well, the return date on it, the first date that the court can address anything in it, is September 29th. You know, we more than likely will be filing some motion very early on around that date that asks the court to hear it quickly. So I would expect sometime in October.
Wow. This would this all allow restaurants to resume and retail outlets to resume business as usual? What would this mean? Should you win this case, what would this mean for our retailers, our business services, our restaurants, our business community as a whole?
We've asked as remedy that all executive orders going back to July 1st be repealed. So in answer to your question, yes, we would be able to go back to some semblance of normalcy if that's granted by the court.
Nice.
You know, interesting, one of our clients in this case is an esthetician. She does facials. Mm-hmm. And this year, the legislature passed a law, well, went into effect this year, that estheticians had to get a license.
Oh.
So our client went and got a license, and then a month later, the government said, you can't operate. Now, estheticians are not even contemplated in phase three, which is, you know, so isn't that the big hand of government slapping you around?
Yeah. Yeah.
No?
Yeah, absolutely right.
One of our clients was actually, in this case, was actually fined by DPH for allegedly violating the travel ban situation, you know, the travel advisory.
Mm-hmm.
We actually had a hearing on that last week, a virtual hearing where the state presented evidence. And, you know, here's a woman who has virtually no income. She's raising two children. She had just gotten divorced. She didn't even know anything about this travel ban. And the DPH whacked her two $1,000 fines. Even though the executive order says up to $1,000 per incident.
And they took advantage of the full extent. Yeah, that's
Yeah. And during the hearing, I asked the investigator, well, you know, where's the discretion? And she said that she was told she had no discretion. And, you know, I'm looking at the executive order that says up to 1,000. I mean, it's just amazing, you know, and the public doesn't know the big hand of government, but, you know, hopefully we'll prevail on that case as well.
All right. One final question before I get to these fines, because we're running out of time, actually. Who decided to file suit? Was it you, or what are you representing? I heard Mike Francis now, another former colleague of mine, your present colleague, State Representative Mike Francis. Were there others, or do they not want to go on and let their name out of the bag, so to speak?
No, I mean, are you asking to? I mean, Mike is a state representative in the case for the separation of powers claim.
Yeah.
But we have two restaurants. We have the esthetician. We have the woman who was fined by DPH.
Okay.
We represent them, Doug and I.
Mm-hmm.
In the lawsuit, they've been aggrieved. Yes, sir.
Okay. And 2 minutes remaining. Let's talk about these new fines that the governor just released yesterday.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people don't know, but it's already in the statute that the governor has that power. You know, I keep on getting messages from people, you know, where does this come from? But when we look at 19A 131A, it says that the governor has the power to fine up to $1,000 or imprison up to a year. Up to a year. Isn't that amazing? That's existing language. Yeah, it says it's 19A 131A parent D. Any individual during the course of a public health emergency declared under this section violates the provisions of any order or who intentionally obstructs, resists, hinders, or endangers any person who is authorized to carry out or who is engaged in any activity that carries out any of the provisions of the order shall be fined not more than $1,000 or imprisoned not more than 1 year or both for each offense.
Wow. Very interesting. We're less than a minute away. So it's no surprise that the media, the TV media specifically, haven't really picked up on this. And this should be front page of blasted on the cross of the Hartford Courant. But, of course, it doesn't get anything. You know you'll get front row right here on the Talk of Connecticut with yours truly here. So I want you to keep us posted on how this progresses through the courts. We're listening intently and can't wait to hear the verdict on this.
Yes, sir. Thank you, and I will be in touch.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time this morning, Craig.